Spaces, and I believe there's a streaming going on right now. Confirmed. Great. Thank you. So there may be some remote participants. All right. Welcome to the Number Resource Policy Development Activities, often also known as the ASO Activities. My name is Louis Lee. I'm the chair of the ICANN ASO Address Council. And at the table with us, we have various members that's related to the numbering world. If I may have Axel start.
Yep.
Good afternoon.
Introducing yourself. Just introduce
yourself. My name is Axel Pavlik. I'm the Managing Director of the RIPE NCC, the Regional Internet Registry for Europe and the Middle East parts of Central Asia, and member of the NROAC as well.
John Curran, President and CEO of ARIN, the American Registry for Internet Numbers. We handle Canada, U.S., and parts of the Caribbean. I am also a member of the NRO Number Council. Executive Council.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Tomohiro Fujisaki. I'm an APNIC representative of SOS member. Thank you.
Wilfried Weber, on the Address Council, one of the three persons for the RIPE service region.
Jean-Robert Antomé, ASOAC member for Afrinic region.
Raúl Echeverría, I'm the CEO of LACNIC and also chair of the Number Resource Organization Executive Council.
Elise Garrick, ICANN Vice President IANA.
All right, then. Thank you very much. So this is the agenda we have today about the ASO, and we'll jump right to about the Address Council. We'll skip over the policy development process slides because many of you are familiar with this. Plus, also, theoretically, you should have the brochures, handouts. May I check with the Secretariat real quick? Okay. All right, great. Those will give you the detailed information you need to give you the background history and what we're about and the policy development process. About the ASO. Now, the Address Council is composed of 15 elected and appointed individuals from all five service regions. This independent body, separate from the RIR management and board, is here to oversee global policy development, appoint two ICANN board of directors, serve on ICANN bodies such as the NOMCOM and the AOC review teams, and advise ICANN board on number resource matters. And we'll go right into the NRO report. Raul?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, perfect. No, it's just a... Okay.
Just swipe. And we just disconnect this.
Okay. This is a... short report of the activities of the Number Resource Organization in the last time. The Number Resource Organization is a vehicle for RIR cooperation and representation. It was formed in 2004 with a memorandum of understanding that was signed among all the RIRs. And it was formed for the purposes of protecting and allocating number resource pool, for promoting and protecting the bottom-up policy development process, and for acting as a focal point for internet community input into the RIR system. This is because we have had many meetings this week with different groups and constituencies and in ICANN, taking advantage of the NRO existence, acting as it is mentioned in the in our objectives, acting as a single point for inputs from the community. And it was, as I said before, it was established another MOU between the Number Resource Organization and ICANN. And due to that memorandum of understanding, the Number Resource Organization took the responsibility of acting as the address supporting of organization of ICANN. There is an executive council that is formed by one member, one representative of each regional internet registry, and usually, and since the beginning, we have been the CEOs of each RIR who form the executive council, and the officers rotate every year. Currently, in 2011. I'm acting as a chairman of the executive council. John Curran from ARIN is the secretary, and Paul Wilson, who is not here today, from APNIC, is the treasurer. Next year, just in 2 months, John Curran will become the chair of the Number Resource Organization, and Paul Wilson will be the secretary, and Adiel Abklogan from AFNIC will be the treasurer. And hopefully I will not have anything to do. except if my colleagues invent other position in the executive council. There are some coordination groups in the Number Resource Organization. One of them is the Engineering Coordination Group, that is the ECG, it's an acronym, and the Communication Coordination Group, CCG, and the Public Affairs Coordination Group, PACG. And you can see that those three groups are chaired by the members of the group that belong to the RIR that hold the chairman position in a given year. So this year we have three people from LACNIC: Arturo Servín, chairing the Engineering Coordination Group, Ernesto Majó, chairing the Communications Coordination Group, and Andres Piazza, chairing the Public Affairs Coordination Group. There is another group that is the Registration Service Manager that doesn't rotate. The chairmanship doesn't rotate every year, and the chair is always Leslie Novile from ARIN, who hold this position through the different years. The NRO is not incorporated organization, and it has its own budget, and so but we make many expenses on the name of the Number Resource Organization, and so every year we decide based on a formula that was agreed many years ago. We decide how to distribute the NRO expenses among the RIRs. One of the NRO expenses is the contribution that we pay to ICANN every year. That's a voluntary contribution that is based in an agreement that we got many years ago. And so you can see the percentage that in 2010 each RIR had to pay, and the amount that which we contribute to ICANN every year is $823,000. Since last year, we have tried to increase the NRO presence in ICANN meetings. It is quite obvious that most of meetings that are held during this week in ICANN meeting are related with domain names and not with IP addresses. And so in previous years, we diminished our presence in ICANN meetings, not because of decision, just because we just came to ICANN meetings for having a couple of meetings. So the NRO activities were less visible for the rest of the ICANN community. Based on some talks that we had with ICANN staff and ICANN board members and also among ourselves, we decided to increase the NRO presence in ICANN activities, and we started in Cartagena last year to hold this kind of workshops and to ensure the presence of address council members from all the regions. also we have having some contacts with other constituencies. This week has been quite active, the NRO presence in Dakar. Just this morning we held a meeting with ICANN board that I think that it was very productive, and also meetings with ICANN staff, with the CCNSO, CNSO, with the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. So we have held activities in Cartagena, in San Francisco, in Singapore, and now for the next presentation we should add also Dakar as probably the meeting in which we have held more activities. The NRO, since the beginning of the Internet Governance Forum, has been very active in this environment. There is a group in the Internet Governance Forum that is named the Multi-Stakeholder Advisory Group. That is a group that is formed by people from different stakeholder groups, and is the group that is responsible of setting up the agenda and discussing the format of the meeting every year. It is about 40 people from different stakeholder groups that participate in this group, and we have two people from the NRO, Kathy Handley from ARIN, and myself. The NRO now is also represented in another committee that has been created this year, for discussing the improvements that are necessary or not in the Internet Governance Forum. After 5 years of holding this forum, IGF, it was decided that it has been already included in the agreement of the Tunis Summit on Information Society, that after 5 years the IGF should be reviewed, and so there is one body within UN system, that is the ECOSOC, and there is under ECOSOC there is a commission, that is the Commission on Science and Technology for Development, and this commission has decided to create a group for evaluating IGF and recommending improvements. After some discussion, because these kind of things are never easy within UN system, we achieved that this group would be a multi-stakeholder group. We had the opportunity to appoint three people from the technical internet community, and two of them are linked to the NRO, Sam Dickinson, that is a staff of APNIC, and Oscar Robles, that is member of the board of LACNIC. We had a very active participation a few weeks ago in the last meeting of the Internet Governance Forum in Nairobi, Kenya. And during that meeting, we held a meeting with the UN Assistant Secretary General Thomas Stelzer. That was one of the activities in which we had the opportunity to express our concerns and our views about the future of IGF. We also had a booth, an NRO booth, run by the staff from all the IRs. That is always a good thing, very helpful for having contacts with the community, and just distributing some materials and informing people. We held some workshops during IGF in Kenya about things about IPv6, for example. We have also active participation in workshops that were organized by other organizations, and we were very active, especially in discussions that were held about IPv6, about the future of ICF, about internet governance mechanisms. That this was an ICF, a meeting that was more political than the previous one, but we were involved in all the activities in which it was necessary to be present for defending the values of the internet community. We contributed with the host of the IGF in Kenya. And we had during that week, we also had a meeting with the Brazilian government representative about a proposal that had been issued 2 weeks before IGF in Kenya. In that proposal, it was proposed to create a body within UN for oversighting all the technical and organizations and all the organizations that have some role in the operation of the internet, and including development standard organizations. And so we have a meeting with the Brazilian government representative that was one of the governments that was involved in that proposal. The other governments were the government of India and government of South Africa. And we, during that meeting, we expressed all our views and positions regarding this IPSA proposal. And the good thing was that they were reviewing some of the things that had been included in the IPSA proposal. And they changed their attitude, and they say that this would be an open proposal for discussion. So I think that meeting was very productive. Regarding our relationship with ITU, the last year it was held the most important ITU meeting that is held every 4 years. That is the ITU Plenipotentiary Assembly. There were a couple of resolutions that were taken in that assembly, in which the assembly tasked the ITU Secretary General to be more active in the relationship with other stakeholders, especially in IPv6 matters. And so we exchanged a couple of letters with ITU. We invited them to hold some talks in order to explore the possibility of having common activities, but we have not had any concrete meeting or after that. There is a working group that had been formed 2 years ago within ITU that for dealing with IPv6. In the origin, this working group was created because there were some concerns from some developing countries about the IPv6 allocation system. There were 3 meetings in which we participated, and we were very active. And now, this year had not been working group meetings, and it was announced that the next meeting will be held in March or February. Of course, we continue paying attention to the work of this working group, and we will be there. Also, the NRO is a founding member of the Internet Technical Advisory Committee, ITAC, of OECD. As we participate, they are also providing comments for documents that are elaborated by OECD and provided advice in topics that are related with our scope. Some ongoing activities during 2011, some of them started last year, the engineer coordination. So we, of course, at this moment, our engineers coordinated group is focused on RPKI implementation and coordination. We held 2 retreats this year, one of them in February in Miami that was hosted by ARIN. It coincided with the ceremony of distribution of the last 5/8, and we took advantage of the presence of leaders of other internet organizations for having a meeting with ICANN, ISOC, IAB, IETF that was really very useful. Now a meeting like this one with all the internet organizations seems that it will be held in the end of November again, so we will be participating also in that meeting. Some of the topics that were covered in the NRO retreats were the agreements for establishing a public affairs coordination group, review and discussion on RPKI issues, technical coordination, ongoing ASO review. We are conducting a review of the ASO as a requirement of ICANN. That's all the constituencies are doing the same things. So also we had some discussions and work, coordinated work on legacy space, and that was necessary. And we have issued many statements in 2011. This is the complete list of the statements that the NRO had made public during the year, and all of them are available in the NRO website. But for example, we send a letter to ICANN about the ANA contract, we invited ICANN to work together in toward implementation of RPKI Global Trust Center. We sent comments to the U.S. Department of Commerce notice of inquiry on IANA contract, and some letters to ITU, as I said before, and some other things. And I think that this is the report of our activities. Thank you, Louis.
Thank you very much, Raul. Before we go on, I'd like to introduce Adil Afghan, the CEO of AFRINIC, in case you have any questions. Do you want to take any questions about NRO activities at this point? Okay. Are there any questions? Do we have a mic?
Be friend of us.
Our friend is not back there.
Alain Mitterrand. I'm from France Telecom. Yeah. In Nairobi during the IGF meeting, the NTIA announced that there will be an open RFP for the IANA function. Does the NRO have an opinion on it?
On what specifically?
If maybe you can just refer to the letter that the NRO sent to ICANN about the IANA.
So we have been supportive of ICANN retaining the IANA functions and retaining the three functions together. Participated and made comments in the two opportunities that the U.S. government opened for comments. Basically, and I think that could you move to a couple of our position has been that we don't support any expansion of IANA functions, that we support ICANN as IANA functions performer, we support to keep the IANA functions together, as I said before. And so we proposed also in March this year the introduction of the concept of cooperation agreement as a possibility for substituting a new contract between ICANN and the U.S. government as a way to show a step forward, the reduce of the oversight role of the U.S. government about IANA functions. It is clear that this has not been considered as a possibility for this time. I don't know if you refer to other things, because now in this what is happening now is a new phase in which the bid will be open for submissions of proposals, and so now we are just observers. We don't have anything to do, but we remain supportive of ICANN as we stated in previous statement. We think that considering the hypothetical allocation of those functions to any other organizations should be really a very, very, very bad idea.
Thank you. I don't see anybody else looking for to ask a question. Great, thanks, Raul. And speaking of IANA, then, does everybody know really well what IANA does? Okay, well, Elise is here to tell us.
Hi, so I'm Elise Garrick from ICANN. I'm the VP IANA, and I guess Louis will move the slides for me. And I want to thank the ASO, our supporting organization, for being so supportive. As you just heard Raul say, they support us both verbally and emotionally, as well as financially, and we appreciate all kinds of support from them. So you asked about the contract. So the IANA does have a contract that's been extended. Actually, it's ICANN's contract with the NTIA has been extended for the IANA functions until March 31st, 2012. And then just last week, the Department of Commerce, NTIA department, published their notice of an upcoming solicitation. So that's kind of a pre-notice that they're going to have a solicitation that's going to come out. In that pre-notice, they mentioned that the solicitation or the request for comment is a request for proposal as it is known, is expected to be published on or around November 4th. And there will be 30 days for organizations that are interested in responding to this RFP to respond. So responses and proposals to the RFP are due on or around December 4th. So as you can tell, those of us from ICANN will be very busy within the next 30 days preparing our response to submit for this proposal. May I see the next slide, please? So obviously the IANA does more than just numbers, and I'm sure you all are well aware that we had a big celebration last year in February, and so we gave out the last IPv4 addresses that the IANA held. So my report is less about numbers right now and more about what we do in general and the general support of the numbers and domains as well as protocol parameters. And one of those supporting activities is we entered into a business excellence activity 2 years ago. It's based on the European standard EFQM for a quality management model. And some of the highlights of those activities that we've been doing to improve our performance and the quality of service that we offer is that we've taken all of our processes and we've come up with a standard process model, and we've gone and converted our documentation and processes into this standard process model, which if you've ever gone through this exercise, you realize even though you think you know exactly what you do, once you start writing it down and everyone gets together, you discover that some people think they know they're doing the same thing that someone else is doing, but it's not exactly the same. So now we've kind of gotten that all aligned and it's all documented and formal. Also, we've been reviewing our key performance indicators, KPIs. And by reviewing these KPIs, we've decided to set some new key performance indicators. And in order to do that and make them efficient, we're benchmarking our performance in these areas right now, and then we're setting targets so that we can consistently improve on those performance indicators. Next slide, please. You probably can't read the screenshot, but that's not the part they need to read. I've been the IANA VP for about 16 months now, and when I took this position, I discovered that we had been in the process of developing root zone automation for about 5 years. Well, the exciting news is that in July of this year, we actually deployed the root zone automation system. And this means that individuals who are running their top-level domains and are submitting name server changes or contact changes or record changes of any sort that have to do with their top-level domain can now automatically do this with their own login to an automated system, and then they can track the progress within this automated system. And it's an end-to-end system, so it starts with your entry into the IANA with your request for whatever change it is. It goes then automatically, once it's been completed, the checks in the IANA check system to NTIA, where they review that we've done the process appropriately, and then they click their automated piece, and then it goes to VeriSign, who actually makes the change in the operational services. And so that process is automated end-to-end. There's three separate models, or modules. And in order for TLD operators to be able to use this, they had to have their own secure login and password. So we distributed the credentials to all the 474 credentials were distributed. That means almost two per TLD. Some TLDs have the same people or manage multiple TLDs. And these credentials were submitted to those individuals, and they had 30 days to activate the credentials. And I've had in this meeting several people who've come up and said, well, why did you expire my credentials before I accepted them? The thought process for the 30-day expiration was that we didn't want credentials into this secure system lingering out there for 6 months, 9 months, or a year. And so people had 30 days to accept them and start exercising them, or accepting them and not start exercising them. and if they didn't accept them, they expired, and then they can contact us when they're ready, and we'll make a new set of credentials and give them to them. But in that 30-day time frame, 40% of the TLDs that received their credentials exercised them and accepted them. So there's only 60% of those TLDs out there who I guess we'll hear from when they're ready. Next slide, please. So this is just a bar graph showing you of the uptake and usage on the root zone management system, the automated system. And we're pretty excited, actually, because it's shown that people have embraced this. For those of you who may not be able to read it, the two bars on the right-hand side are September and October. The credentials were fully distributed at the end of September. And so as you can see, there's bar graph for things we got via email, which were requests for the root zone system in email, and some that we got via the web interface, their credentials. So in September, there were 9 via email, and we had 45 via the web, which is, we thought, pretty exciting. So those early adopters were definitely out there. And then in October, we got, and that's just part of this month, 23 came in via email and 51 via the web. So the community is adopting it. They are using it, and the system is very robust. We're pretty happy about the trend in submissions by email or manual submissions and the way people are now being able to use the system automatically and track their requests as they want within the system. Next slide, please. So we do a lot of stuff with the RIRs also still. And so right now, one of the things that we've been working on with the RIRs is a process for IPv6 allocation requests. As everyone probably knows, the RIRs got a single request each a long time ago, maybe not that long ago, but some time ago. And we're expecting that there'll be more requests for IPv6 coming in. And so there's a discussion going on between our teams to come up with a good way of doing this going forward. Also, there's the discussion talking about what does it actually mean to have reserved IPv6 addresses or reserved IPv6 sparse allocations in the context. And this is so that there's a common understanding and that there's transparency in the allocation of IPv6 addresses going forward and could lead to automation of those allocations, much like we've done root zone automation. Next slide. You want me to go faster? Is that what you're saying? Okay. I'm done. This is my last slide. So anyway, these are other things we've done for the DNSSEC. You have to be audited about your system, and we received our accreditation for the audit. We also have met or exceeded the SLAs in our MOU with the IATF. These are for the protocol parameters. And multicast.net had a redelegation of its name servers to make them more robust and enhanced. So that's it. Goodbye. Sorry, he told me to go fast.
Thank you very much, Elise.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. If there are any strong, urgent questions for Elise, I don't see anybody. Thank you very much. All right. Let's jump into the policies here. We have an overview of the number of policy discussions for global proposals and the regional policy proposals. Of the global proposals, the one that's on the table right now is labeled GPP-IPv4 2011. This is the global policy for post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation mechanisms by the IANA. Well, so what it does, it allows address space to be received by from the RIRs to the IANA, and for IANA to reallocate back to the RIRs. There's been substantial progress on this. It looks like it's, for this proposal, it's been active for less than a year. However, work's been going on for over 3 years with earlier versions of this type of proposal. So as you see the status in AFRNIC, it's last call. APNIC has been adopted. Aaron's in last call. Latinic, last call, and RIPE.
Has been adopted.
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 Ah, okay, update, great. Latinic has been adopted. So we are now waiting for Aaron and AFRNIC. Excellent. And then when that's completed, that'll be passed on to the ASO Address Council for processing, and then onto the Aaron board if it passes review. Ray? ICANN board.
She's behind you.
Thank you, Louis. Ray Polzak, ICANN board. When can the board expect to see this?
Excellent question. I don't believe the AFRNIC meeting is for another few weeks, November. Okay? Then after November, there's... actually, we don't need the meeting now because it's in the last call. When do you think the board meeting would be next? Adiel? Okay.
Yeah, I think by the end of the next meeting, it will be ready, so the board will expect it by the end of the year, I guess. We will ratify it at
you
the board
it?
Level
okay.
At AFRNIC 15 meeting.
And is there an opinion from John about board ratification?
So the Aaron board gets to ratify the policy after it's been sent to it by the ASOAC in the Aaron region. In the Aaron Advisory Council. The Aaron Advisory Council has to look at the results of the last call and decide whether or not to continue work on the policy, abandon the policy, bring it over to another public policy meeting, or send it to the board. That is a unpredictable process at this point because it's their judgment based on the input. There is a lot of input. So it's a very good understanding of what the policy provides and doesn't, but I don't know whether or not the advisory council will send it to the board. If the advisory council sends it to the board, it is possible that this would be seen early, this would be seen adopted in the Aaron region very early next year. If the advisory council decides to do further work on it, then the time frame is indeterminate.
So I would say no earlier than early next year.
So,
it's on.
So
go ahead.
So, understanding all the processes, then, in the time that the address council has to work on the policy, it would be probably sometime, if everything goes smoothly from what John was saying, then the ICANN board would not see this until sometime in April or May. Is that correct?
I hope before. Much before.
Okay, I'm just trying to go through remembering the process steps because the address council's got some processing time too. And so if you saw it in, didn't get it till February, you couldn't start working on it then until then. So it would be at least April given the process time before I think it would be seen. Is that correct?
Well, we can short circuit a lot of that by starting work in producing our report from what we know so far, so that once it reaches us, there's very little left to do, and then we can have our own meeting. And depending on when it's sent to us, we could easily be able to send it, turn it around to the ICANN board within a week.
Okay, and then the ICANN board has got process time as well.
Yes.
So it would still probably be April or May before the board would have a chance to enact it. Okay.
Great, thank you for that question. And on to the regional policy activities. This slide shows you that in the IPv4 policies, there are very many policies being worked on in relationship to allocation, reclamations, and transfers. In contrast, there are fewer IPv6 address policies, only six. And WHOIS changes, five. And there's one other type of policy being worked on. It should be noted, though, that this work isn't evenly distributed. For instance, in the Aaron region, that's many of the policies, almost all the policies, are IPv4 related, whereas in APNIC there's hardly any IPv4 policies. And in the next time we have this workshop, I expect to have more of a breakdown, if that's an interesting stat. And in total, 52. So, if I may ask, and thank you very much for the ICANN board members to have participated. The ICANN board members have to leave for the next commitment. Whoops, and I did not mean to shut this off. Next up, we have Jean Robert.
So, in the Afrinic region, so the Afrinic region has its policy development process. It's a bottom-up policy, as you saw in the previous slide. The process is open, fair, and transparent. Everything is documented. And this is an example of a policy. The soft landing policy proposal. What this policy does?
The screen's messed up. It's displaying okay up there.
Okay. This policy calls for a change in the current allocation of IPv4 address space. Because IPv4 is a valuable resource, and we want to make sure that when we reach the exertion, the current address is correctly distributed in a neat basis. So the policy set up the criteria for exertion phase. And exertion phase happen when one of the two following criteria are met. The first one is when Afrinic receive a request that cannot be fulfilled with the current pool. We are talking outside from the /8 because the current policy is deal with how Afrinic will allocate resources with the /8. And the second criteria is when fulfilling a request will deplete the pool that Afrinic has. So the exertion phase is in two phases, phase one and phase two. Phase one keep the minimum allocation that we have at this time for end users at /24, for LIR at /22, but move the maximum allocation to /13. It was at /10, or it's currently at /10. But when we will reach that phase, the minimum allocation, the maximum allocation will be /13, and it introduces also a phase two of exertion that will happen when we will reach /11, and it will set the minimum allocation to /24 and the maximum allocation to /22. Then the policy also introduced some different recommendations One of the recommendations is around the allocation period. That will be moved from, actually, it's currently it's at 12 months. It will be moved to 8 months. It's changed also the eligibility for new allocation. At this time, it's at 80% of current allocation. It will move it to 90%. There is also a recommendation that all resources must be used within Afrinic service region or must be used to support connectivity back to Afrinic service region. So we've spent 3 years discussing around the policy. It gained consensus at the previous Afrinic meeting in Dar es Salaam, Afrinic 13 meeting. When it came back, because within the policy development process, after the public policy meeting, the policy goes back to the mailing list for discussion. So it goes back to the mailing list for discussion. There were some issues. And at this time, the chair are discussing around the various issues that were raised during the mailing list, but there were no major objections. So what will happen is that at the next Afrinic meeting, meaning maybe we are expecting to finish talking about this policy, then move it to Afrinic board for ratification. Okay, so you have different reference about the policy. Thank you. Is there any question?
Thank you, Jean-Robert. Next up, we have Tomohiro-san to present a APNIC policy case study.
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. And I'm Tomohiro Usaki again, and from APNIC, I'll introduce an IPv4 address policy discussion titled Removal of IPv4 Prefix Exchange Policy. In APNIC, we number this address policy as Prop 80. Okay. And maybe almost all of you know that APNIC has been starting to distribute IPv4 address space from the last final slash 8 block. And this policy proposed to arrange the address policy in the IPv4 address run-out phase. Okay, and previously, APNIC had a policy to exchange 3 or more non-contiguous IPv4 address blocks to one single larger contiguous address block. And this policy was the aim of this policy is to reduce the total IPv4 routing table size. And this policy proposal to remove this policy from the IPv4 distribution policy. And this policy proposal was submitted at January 2010 and discussed at mailing list, APNIC policy SIG mailing list, and APNIC meeting, APNIC 29 meeting, and it reached consensus at that meeting and then completed the policy process in 18th May 2010. And this policy was implemented July last year. Next, please. Yeah. And this is a summary of this policy process. And initial IPv4 exchange policy aimed at aggregating multiple small IPv4 address blocks to one larger address blocks to reduce the global IPv4 routing table size. However, because of the IPv4 address exhaustion, it makes it difficult to prepare big continuous address blocks for this purpose. And one more, there are possibility to use this policy to get larger IPv4 address blocks without properly justifying the need of the address. So the APNIC community agreed to remove this exchange policy from the IPv4 distribution policy. Okay, this is a policy. Next week, so this is the example of the policy in APNIC. Okay, next please. Okay, this is, almost final slides. You can see the detail of the APNIC policy development process and the proposal. This policy is Prop 80 and the current APNIC IPv4 policy from this page. Please refer to this page for more detail. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tomohiro-san.
Yep.
Are there any questions to Tomohiro-san about this policy case study? Okay, let's move on. Being that I hail from the Aran region, I'll be presenting the Aran policy case study. This case study relates to a point of contact cleanup work that was done a little while ago. Was submitted in August 2008. It was directed to Aran to clean up some bad POCs, email addresses in the Whois database. I realize here in the ICANN forum there's lots of Whois work as it relates to privacy, accuracy, and so on. And there is also work in the Aran region and other RIRs related to Whois. There was a discussion on the mailing list in October 08 with a revised version coming on the list a year later, and with a last call in May 2009. Afterwards, being that there was a consensus reach, it was forwarded to the Aran board and adopted in July 2009 with full implementation a year later. And it took that long because there was significant engineering that was required that was expected to be 18 months. So in that it was done in 60% of the time, that was great, within 60% of the estimate. Now, the results on this, we have ongoing automated process to handle this now. It requires yearly validation and or updating all your Aran point of contact records. If no response within 60 days, the record would be marked invalid, and Aran would not process further requests, such as requests for a number of resources from invalid POCs. They would have to revalidate first. In that... this may match up with some requirements on the names Whois side to validate Whois, or at least to let your point of contact know to go check your Whois records. Continued results are that the POC records are being cleaned up on an ongoing basis. If you need more details, you can see this list of references to get those details. Are there any questions? Wonderful. Now, to present the Lightning policy proposals and the case study, I've asked Jean Robert to handle that as Helmut Glasser, who is on site here and can be available for your questions, has a time commitment conflict.
Okay. So this is a policy case study within Lightning region. The policy is for initial allocation and assignment of IPv4 addresses or ISPs. So the proposal was submitted in September 2010, And the objective is to replace the current multi-homing condition with a broader requirement that includes both multi-homing and interconnection needs. People within Lakening region wanted this change because ISP within the region can have only one internet connection. However, they can have different peer. There are different peering possibility. So this was discussion on October 2010. Last call until December 2010, ratified by a Lightning Board in April 2010. I think that's April 2011.
Yes.
And adopted in May 2011. So the result is that it sets the same requirement for both multi-home ISP planning to be multi-home soon, or with interconnection needs when requesting initial/21 or bigger block. If the applicant is planning to become multi-home or need to interconnect with other autonomous system, they must describe in detail the corresponding plan and timeline. The proposal made it easier to get IPv4 space, especially for those ISPs from countries or locations where it is difficult to be multi-home. So you have some references about the Lightning policy development process, the reference number of the policy proposal, and different sections of Lightning policy manual modified, and also a link to the discussion during public policy forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean-Robert. Are there any questions to any of us for, so far on these policies?
John Walubengo from Kenya. I had a question for Epinik. He was saying some people were abusing the system when they returned their non-contiguous IPs. I don't understand how that will happen, given that you're the one who then gives them the next range. So I don't see how they abuse the system. Maybe you explain.
Yes, thank you for your question. And so, for example, address user has /3/24 non-continuous block. Then they apply to change the 3/24 to the 1/22. So yes, that is the original policy. Yes, because one single continuous block.
As Epinik, as much as they apply for a bigger one, can't you do your analysis and probably give them a smaller slash?
If, the original policy, the applicant can get the exact same or the 1-bit shorter range, yes. Okay.
Thank you for that question, then. Thank you, Tomohiro-san. Next up, we have Wilfred for the right policy proposal case study.
Yeah, going last in this set of five presentations. This one that we selected for our region is actually giving a little bit of insight and explanation about the reaction of the community to a changing environment. Because as you may know, there was an expectation that we would have a global policy that describes and controls and manages the whereabouts of address space, which might happen to come back from somewhere to somewhere. This didn't work out exactly as was imagined and expected
couple of years ago. At the same time, in our region, we had a policy being developed that's similar to what in other regions is called soft landing and that sort of things. In a sense, the issue is how do you deal with managing the last big block of addresses that are in hold at the regional registry, or in techie lingo, the last slash eight. And so this was actually agreed. It was pretty easy, and it was then formally written down in a policy document, which in our region is labeled RIPE 530, and that describes what the RIPE NCC is expected to do with this remaining address space. However, as I said already, there was a slight change in the environment, and the community recognized that all of the folks who had been involved in developing the policy did have quite a concise and quite the same understanding how to interpret the text. However, anyone coming in from different environments or coming in later could potentially interpret the text in this document, RIPE 530, in a slightly different way. And this was the reason to go ahead and start a policy development process, not to change what actually is written down in RIPE 530, but rather to clarify some of the aspects and to clarify and also to advise the RIPE NCC how to proceed in certain circumstances. Could we have the next slide, please? So this is just the timelines here for this proposal as we label it 2011-3. In our region, all of those proposals receive a timestamp with the year when this process was started for this particular issue, and then we are just counting up from 1 to 2 to 3 to whatever it takes. The timeline was that this proposal was submitted in May this year, so this is just a few months ago. There was pretty much support from the community. There was no big disagreement about what the interpretation should be. Then another step kicks in our region, and that we usually ask the RIPE NCC, based on a rather stable draft of the proposed policy, to sit back, to look at their own internal procedures, and to come back with what we call an impact analysis. And that's actually asking the RIPE NCC, asking our regional registry, to find if and when, and if there are what they are, if there are any showstoppers in the sense that it would require them to invest excessively in resources, whatever they are, either automation or personal resources or whatever. So RIPE NCC, as expected, came back with telling the community, well, there is no big issue. We don't see any major problem in implementing the proposal. And we then had a couple of messages sent back and forth on the policy development mailing list, trying to make sure that everyone understands the text in the same way. And it was then put into last call in August 2011. And next slide, please. And this last phase for the policy development usually includes a period that we call last call for about 4 weeks. And as you may know, the various communities in the five regions do have some slightly different procedures close to the end of declaring consensus and implementing policy. In our region, when the working group chairs are satisfied that consensus has been reached in the community, then this is formally announced to the group of all the working group chairpersons in our region. So not just the address policy people, but also like myself for the database working group and even all the other working group persons. And this community, this set of individuals is mandated to look at the process and to sort of make sure that the regular time frame was obeyed and was observed, and that all the comments were taken into account. This was done in this particular case, and consensus was declared, and it was forwarded to the RIPE NCC for implementation, which in this particular case actually is an update to Section 5.6 in an existing document. So this exercise was not to come up with new specific policy, or like in the APNIC case, to change policy or to revoke existing policy, but rather to update a formal policy document and to make sure that everybody understands the thing in the same way. And for the content of this thing, what we wanted to make sure is that wherever address space is coming from and going back into the basement of the RIPE NCC for management, that this is handled exactly the same way as any address space that is or that was in the /8 bin. Because potentially there is a chance that a pretty big block gets returned either voluntarily or because one of the local registries gets closed down and the resources are reclaimed. So there is a theoretical chance that the set of addresses in the basement of the RIPE NCC becomes bigger than a /8. I mean, the chances are pretty slim, I guess, but a policy text and a policy framework should take care of those boundary conditions as good as is possible with reasonable effort. And towards the bottom of this slide, you can see the references here. And with that, I'd like to ask whether there are any questions. And if not, I'd like to hand it back to Louis. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wilfred. Any questions for all of us for that so far? Okay, well, in closing the presentation, I have a few words, and then we can open up the floor for full discussion for these items or any other items related to the ASO Address Council or addressing activities. I would have to remind you at that point that this isn't a formal feedback into any policies that are active. However, that doesn't mean that we can't bring your sentiments on your behalf. Just know that it would be secondhand, and it would be more useful if you were able to participate directly. In any case, you did see that there are many different policies being worked on, both regionally and including some of that is global work. The regions, as large as they are, have a group of like-minded folks who develop policies that govern themselves, which isn't to say that a large region can't create a policy related to a smaller part of their region. For instance, in the Aran region, there are special policies related to the Caribbean regions to meet the operators in the Caribbean region who are within the Aran service region. Okay. So if you would like, please visit our website, aso.icann.org, for news about new global policy proposals. And you may participate in the policy discussions within your RIR region easily. They're discussed on mailing lists and open policy meetings. To subscribe and participate, there are no membership requirements, meaning you do not have to reside in the region. You do not have to be a subscriber of services in any way to participate in the policy development process. And you don't even have to, yes, you do not have to stay within your region. And to reiterate, participation is fairly easy. You may attend the RIR meetings either in person for a nominal fee or for free via remote participation. All right, this concludes the presentation portion. Are there any questions? Okay, I'll open the floor for a discussion. Are there certain topics we want to concentrate on first, and or maybe we can take a list of topics? Anyone want to offer one? May I ask a show of hands for who are either subscribed to a policy mailing list or have attended an RIR meeting? Great. May I ask, if you would, raise your hand if this is the first time attending one of these workshops. Excellent. Any other stats anybody's interested in? I would appreciate comments for improving this workshop or any other way we can help you or your company or your region. John, yes.
This workshop is one of the few sessions that I can where we try to provide an update on what's going on regarding address policy. So we don't take a lot of time in the ICANN schedule of the week, but to the extent that you have any questions at all about what the state of policy is, either overall or in a particular region, that's what we're here for. Feel free to find us afterwards if you don't have a question you want to ask publicly. Thank you.
If I may also suggest that on Friday morning is the ASO update to the ICANN board. That is fairly well attended in that there are other SOs and AC chairs giving their updates. And being fairly well attended, it does generate some questions and discussions. Even though there's limited time for the updates, Steve is very good at allowing extra time to bring up important topics. So if you don't have something right now, maybe go there and see if something triggers a question, or you may want to just at least listen in there. Thank you. Oh, we do have a question. I'm sorry. I just remembered that there is an ASO review. I want to remind you that this is going on right now. It's being done by an independent group. If you would like to say a few words, please.
Hello, Tom McKenzie from Items International in Paris. And so we are conducting the external review of the ASO. And really, it was just to say that as part of this review, we're conducting interviews, and so we've met most of the people around this table, but any that we haven't met, we would like to meet. Of course, anybody else in the room who would like to talk to us about their feelings or impressions of the ASO, that would be very interesting to us. And secondly, we're running an online survey, which we would invite you to take part in if you haven't taken part in it already. This survey can be reached at... you have a link to it? Oh, right, perfect. There it is, items.fr/aso.php. It's a very simple survey, and it'll only take you really about 5 minutes of your time, I should think. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Any questions about the survey or the review? We expect the review to be completed and the draft available for the public before the end of the year. Is that correct?
Yeah. We will be handing the NRO a draft, but that for your consideration in the first week of November. And we will be handing our final document to you in the first week of December this year.
Excellent. Then I expect it to be sent over to ICANN and put online fairly shortly after. Okay, then. This concludes the session. Thank you very much. Please look for this to occur at every public ICANN meeting.